calls at Shearson and a botched restructuring of the firm's executive suite clinched his fate. By that spring, Cohen was unemployed, spending much of his time in a nasty fight over his severance agreement. Ted Forsman, though defeated in his own quest for RJR, felt thoroughly vindicated by the subsequent collapse of the junk bond market, proving to many that Forsman's warnings of a dire economic collapse might in fact come true. In the months following the battle, Forsman, who continued to spend more time attacking the crevices of the world than completing deals, was constantly in demand as a speaker and lecturer. Henry Kravis won the battle for RJR, but he may have lost the war. Rumors of federal anti-takeover legislation combined with the collapse of the junk bond market to quash practically all major LBO activity for 18 months following the RJR deal. Colbert Kravis itself failed to complete a single major LBO during this period, contenting itself with sundry European investments and with managing RJR. In the end, the founders of both RJR and Nabisco would have utterly failed to understand what had happened to their companies. In the mind's eye, it is not so hard to see R.J. Reynolds and his compatriots wandering through the carnage of the LBO war. They would turn to each other occasionally to ask puzzled questions. Why did these people care so much about what came out of their computers and so little about what came out of their factories? Why were they so intent on breaking up instead of on building up? And last, what did all this have to do with doing business?
We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.